Okay, well, good morning, everybody. Welcome. Hope you're all doing well. Everybody okay? Very good? Good. Okay. All right. Well, I really don't have any announcements. So I'm going to open us up in prayer and we'll get going. Well, Father, we thank you for our time today. Lord, I thank you that we have the ability to gather together. And I just pray, Lord, that you would just not only bless our meeting, but we invite you to come and just fill this room with your presence, God. I pray that you would not only fill this room, but I pray that you would just rest on every one of us. And that you'd be working and moving in us as we look at your word and as we praise your name. God, I just pray for your spirit just to fill this place. I pray for your spirit to fill us. And God, I pray that everything that is not of you would be driven from this place. Anything that has found its way into us or onto us from out there, just anything that's not of you, Lord, just drive it from us. And I pray, God, that your kingdom, rule, and reign would be in our place today, that your presence would be here, that your power would be here, your anointing would be here, and that you would be working, moving in each and every one of us according to how you will and what you want to do. And we just give you glory and honor in our time. And we just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, how do people show love? You know, it's not always as you might think. Sometimes we miss seeing the love in others towards us because of how other people show it. Sometimes it's not what we expect love to look like from other people. Sometimes it's because their way of showing it is not what we're used to. In 1992, the author and counselor Dr. David Chapman wrote the now famous book, The Five Love Languages. And I want to speak about this a little bit, but not to those in a marriage, but from the standpoint of normal relationships with one another. I need you to go sit in the back. Okay, so I want to speak about this a little bit. But again, not from the standpoint of marriage, but from the standpoint of normal relationships with one another. From our relationships with one another here, in our family here. But also, as I talk about these, I'm not talking about as much about those who demonstrate these love languages, but I want to talk about it mostly from the standpoint of those who respond to them. Those who say, if you want to reach me, if you want to connect with me, if you want to express your love and your care and your support and concern and affirmation, this is the best way to do it. This is the way that will communicate that to me. So there's like I said, there's five love languages, and the first one is words of affirmation. For those who respond to this one, the words that they say will have a greater impact on them than other things will. Things like just saying to someone, I appreciate what you're doing for me. Or, I love the way that you do something. Or, I'm glad you're here today. Or, I just appreciate you. All of these go a long way with the person who responds to this. Whether it's a verbal compliment or a note or a card, it shows that you care about them and appreciate what they do. So here again, the goal here is to let the others know that they mean something to you and that you're not just another face in the crowd, that you're noticed and that you're important. So the five love languages, this one is the most common. People who demonstrate this language are probably more sensitive in their surroundings and might be encouragers themselves. And so for those that are on the giving end of this language from another, when someone expresses it, it's they mean it when they express it. And they're expressing it out of who they are. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that if you're going to affirm someone who is this language, this is their language, if you're going to express something to them, be real. If you don't mean it, don't say it. because they can probably tell if you're not being sincere. These people are very sensitive. And so words can really have an effect on them, whether they're good words or bad words. They can have a great impact on them depending on what those words are. Now, in trying to lift their spirits, if they're down, recognize how they're feeling. Show some sign that you know, such as describing what you think they're feeling. In showing others appreciation, tell them how you appreciate them. And be specific when you do that. You know, what have they done that causes you to appreciate them? And look for ways to show appreciation to others. You know, this is one of those things that you can never do this one enough. But be sincere in what you say. And for those who struggle with this, or in other words, this may not be your love language. And so some people will struggle with giving affirmation. But the thing about it is, if you're speaking to someone who is this language, just take notice of them. Look for some point to affirm them on from what you observe or hear from them. And remember that because these people will find words powerful, they are sensitive people. And therefore, they will also be sensitive to negativity, and they will be sensitive to criticism. For some, a harsh word or an insult can really have a strong negative impact on them, or it can really hurt them. And so this is all the more important to know. This is all the more important for why we need to know our church family members, so that we know how to approach our family members. For some of you, this one may not work at all, either in giving it or receiving it. Now, what that means is that you either speak or respond to another of the languages better. But the trick is to know you and to know your family members, because everyone gives and receives differently. Usually the one who responds best to a particular language is probably also going to have that particular language as their means of expression to others as well. As I said, this one is the most common of the five languages and is the only one that revolves around verbal expression. Now, the second most common language is quality time. And that's the second one. This one is about giving people your time and your attention. It's being attentive to them. That when you speak with them, you're being attentive to them. And when you're with them and how you speak to them. And so this way they feel important. And this is becoming more and more difficult in our day to day due to the popularity of our electronic devices, our phones. I'll watch people all the time in conversations pull phones out, and while someone is talking, they're on their phone. And they're doing two things at once. For someone who this is their gift and they're receiving of it, if that phone gets pulled out in the middle of spending quality time with them, for that person that's the receiver of this, it's not quality time anymore. Because they will feel empty, they will feel disconnected, they'll feel unimportant and alone, even though they're with another person, because of that person's attention to their device as opposed to their attention to that person. So also with this, it's being intentional about this one, okay? In other words, be intentional. You know, invite people to lunch. You know, do things to be intentional about spending time with people. And when talking with them, make eye contact. You know, this helps people feel connected and understood. And use what we used to call around here active listening skills. For those of us who've been around at this place a long time, as I say active listening, we go, oh, all that communication thing that we did years and years and years ago. Yeah, it's that stuff. Focus on what the other person is saying. And when they're talking, maybe just lean into them just a little bit. Just a little bit, because when you lean into someone, it shows that you're interested. Affirm what they're saying. Ask questions. But don't give advice unless it's asked for. Okay? But try to put yourself in their place and in what they're saying. And this helps people feel understood. And it adds to the quality of the time spent, which is really what it's all about. For this one, it's all about quality. Look for ways to connect with people. Be intentional. Make yourself available to people. So many times, we wait for them. And the thing is, they're waiting for someone else. And everybody's waiting and nobody's doing. And when you're with them, stay in the moment. You know, they are the priority when you are with them. Now, if these don't work, the other way that is a close second to the most popular one, which was those words of affirmation, is acts of service. And that's the third one. It's doing nice things for people. It's serving them. These things show love. It's doing something for someone what they would like. Not what we would like, but what they would like. With this, you're taking time to show love on a non-verbal way. If this one is not your thing, this one is the easiest to learn. Just pay attention to people. See what the likes and the needs are. You know, maybe there's some service that they need that you can provide. You know, do something that works for both of your time schedules in whatever you do with them. You know, give out of a strength that is yours that is not a strength in them. But it's something that they need, and you have it. Now, if you're on the receiving end of this language, remember to appreciate the effort of the other. Irregardless of how well it went, appreciate the effort. You know, and so it's know the language of the other person. They may not recognize the language being demonstrated here when you do it for them. In other words, they may not go, oh, acts of service, you're doing acts of service. They may not understand that because it may not be their love language. But that's okay. You know, just do it whether they understand it or not. Now, the fourth one is touch. Now, obviously, because when Dr. Chapman wrote his book, he was really stressing marriage. For our purposes with touch, we're just talking about appropriate hugs, okay? Let's just keep it to that. However, you can take the hand of someone. You can give a hand a gentle squeeze when they need comfort or encouragement. You can pat them on the back. But guys, make sure when you pat someone on, you pat a woman on the back, make sure it is in the safe area on someone's back. Because inappropriate touch will send the wrong message. Okay? And it can cause problems, and we don't want that. Touch shows support. Also, when we distance ourselves from other people and we don't give or we withhold touch, it can communicate an issue to someone where this is their language. Or people are, if I'm having a disagreement with someone, or, you know, and so it can communicate something if I withhold this. But appropriate touch says, we're okay. I think you're okay. Also, body language can also communicate as well. You know, again, as I said earlier, giving eye contact. Give them your attention. Now, another one is this, in just how you stand with someone when you're with them, okay? If you stand with someone and you're talking to them and your arms are folded like this, this can, and I say can, indicate defensiveness. It can also indicate that you are closed off and you can appear to be unsafe or feel unsafe. And this one is kind of tricky because sometimes people just fold their hands like this because they just normally do that. They don't know what to do with these things that hang from their shoulders. And so, you know, but keep in mind, yeah, I know, for us tall people with long arms, this is great. But unfortunately, for other people, it may communicate something and we have no idea it's communicating it. Also, with whole touch, can even sadden or even depress people who respond to this language. There are some people that they need touch. And when we withhold that, we're depriving them of something that they just don't like it. They don't just want it. They need it. Okay. Now, the last of the five languages is giving and receiving gifts. And this language can be the most misunderstood. If your language is receiving, then to some people you may seem greedy. This language demonstrates love by giving someone something. And these people feel loved by receiving. And so for those receiving, it's not about the extravagance of the gift, but it's the thought that counts. You know, it's the thought. You know, someone whose love language is receiving gifts, it doesn't matter what you give them. No, it doesn't matter how big it is. It doesn't matter how small it is. It doesn't matter. Because whatever you give them, it just reminds them that they're loved. You know someone who has this love language, when they think about other people and they remember the things that they say, and so as they're out and about and they see something and they go, oh, and they think about that person they were talking to and the things that they said and they go, oh, you know, that would be perfect for that person. Or they go home and they make something based on what they saw with someone or what someone said. That's someone who has this gift. Or if the language is receiving, then it's shown in how they receive the gift. You know, they're excited about it. It doesn't matter what you give them. They're excited about it because it shows, and they go around and they show it to everybody. You can give them something and think, well, you know, maybe they'll like this. And it's not a big deal to the one that gives it, but to the one that receives it, if they have this gift, oh, man, they go around and they show it to everybody. And they're talking about it to everyone. Well, guess what? They have the gift of they have this gift. But for them, it's receiving. Because the gift says to them that the person who gave it to them loves them. Now, the bad side about knowing the love language of another and how they work and how they can be used is that you can also use this to hurt another person. You know? I don't give people gifts. I withhold my gifts. Or I harshly criticize someone who has the affirming gift. Or I avoid giving someone a hug who needs touch. You know, we can just do those little things and we can hurt someone. But it's good to know these things and to be aware of these things so that we can make a positive impact on someone, so that we can make a positive impact on each other, so that we are positively impacted by one another. But keep in mind that everyone, to some degree, speaks all five of these languages, but most people will have two that are dominant. The thing to remember with these is that you may be someone who does one of these to show love, but that may not be the way that you respond to love from another. In other words, you give one, but you receive a different way. Or the language that you demonstrate may be the same as you know, you demonstrate in the same way which you give and you receive. You demonstrate them the same way. You know, you may feel loved by touch, but you may not feel loved by touch. Or you may feel loved by affirmation instead. So let me kind of give you an example of some of this, what I'm talking about here. Let me talk about my mother and my father, okay? My father showed love by touch. But because most people have two dominant languages, he also felt loved by acts of service. He was not good about giving verbal affirmations at all. But if someone did something for him, he would show love and appreciation by giving a hug. But he might be really not very good about telling you what he thought about what you did. So if you're expecting him to tell you something, you'd be disappointed. But then you'd get this hug from him. That's how he showed it. My mother, on the other hand, her love language was acts of service. This is how she felt love, and this is how she showed love. She was not a touch person at all. Now, for me, not knowing this growing up, I thought that one loved me more than the other. And as a result, I developed harsh feelings toward my parents while I was growing up, and even toward other people who got responses from my parents that I wanted that I didn't get from them. Because I'm going, hey, I should be getting that, and I'm not getting it from them. But I didn't understand these five love languages. I didn't get them. You know, I didn't understand about the ways that my parents responded to me in ways that they didn't respond to other people. I didn't understand this. So my father would like to wrestle with me. You know, we used to ambush each other. We would hide in doorways, and when the other one walked by, we would jump out, and you know, as I got bigger, I could do this. I could grab him, and we would like fall on the bed in the room we were on, and we'd be tickling each other and all this other kind of stuff. And we'd just do this for a minute, and then we would just go back to whatever we were doing. But my dad would not do this with my siblings. He just did it with me. But with my brother, it was quality time that he spent with him. But he also did it with me, but he did it in a different way. And so I would see these things that he did with my brother that were different than he did with me. And as a result of that, I said, hey, he doesn't love me because he's not doing that with me, even though there were the things that he was doing with me. You know, and because he did these different things with each of us, you know, it interpreted how I saw how he loved me. Because he didn't connect with me like he did with my brother. Like my brother and him would sit down and watch certain movies together. They loved John Wayne movies. I like John Wayne movies too, but he didn't sit down and watch those with me like he did with my brother. But my dad would play ping pong with me. He didn't play ping pong with anybody else in the family. He'd only play it with me. Maybe it's because he always won. I don't know. Anyway, I got close sometimes, but now my mother would serve all of us, and would love us by thinking of things that were unique to each of us, and she would give those things to us. But my mother also spent quality time with my brother through watching TV. There were certain programs that they both liked and connected on. But she spent time with me by having deep, meaningful conversations. But I didn't recognize this because she didn't watch TV with me like she did with my brother. And so to know and understand one another as we resume meetings and we are in this new season that we're in, you know, and as we rebuild, it's important to see and understand one another. And we may need to make adjustments in how we show love to some people, or make sure that they understand us so that they know that we love them and don't misread us and then think the opposite of us. We may assume that because we're operating out of our love language that others see and know that what we're doing, but they may not. Because I don't know about, maybe because I don't know about love languages and I don't see what others are doing, or because I see myself being treated differently by someone and then I see how they're treated by another. Now again, going back to my father and I, for those of you that, you know, many of you know this about me, that I have an art background. And so when I was growing up, I was always drawing and painting pictures. And I would show them to my father. My father had art ability, but he really didn't do anything with it. And so I would draw something and I would go show it to him. Now back then, you know, I just wanted to show it to him. I look back on it now and I realize that I was looking for approval. But I didn't realize that back then. But I would show something to him and I was wanting to get a verbal affirmation from him. And I would get, hey, you know, if you just took this and moved it over here and made this bigger and maybe made this color, and I would get furious with him because I wanted to hear, wow, this is fantastic, but I got, well, if you just make these changes, and that's what he would do. And I would get so mad at him and I would get so frustrated at him Because he was giving me compliments. He was giving me suggestions on how to make it even better. And I would just blow up at him. And he would say, "Hey, I'm just trying to help you make it better." Affirmation was not his love language. But his suggestions on an his suggestions were the expression of love. But I couldn't hear it because I didn't recognize it. But he would hug me. He would wrestle with me. We would play catch. Only him and I played catch. These were unique to us, and they were his love language. It took me years to see that my parents loved me and that they had their own unique ways of showing it. And it was in some ways different with me, like I said, from my brother and my sister, because they loved us each individually, but because we're each very different from one another, even though we're born in the same family, we all responded differently. We all had our different ways of showing and giving. So again, I go back to the question that I started with, is how do people show love? It's not always what you might think. And sometimes we miss seeing the love that others show because of how it is shown. Sometimes because it's not what we expect love to look like from another person. So how do we show love to one another in the church? Or maybe I should ask, do we show love to one another in the church? Do you feel loved by your church family? Do the people in your church family know that you love them? How many of us are loved by those around us and we don't know it or feel it because we don't know one another, or we don't know ourselves and we don't know our own love language, whether it is giving it or receiving it? Now, we've been studying in the Bible study class, we've been studying the book of Job. And for those of you that are not familiar with the story, just let me really briefly bring you up to speed here. Job is a man who lost his wealth and his children. And he's stricken with painful sores that are all over his body. He goes from a man of wealth and respect to a person that is a sad, disgusting sight. His friends come to see him and they give him support. And his appearance was so bad that they didn't even recognize him at first when they saw him. And they sit with him for 7 days, silently grieving with him. Y'all with me? Okay, stay with me here. Silently grieving with him. And then they speak after 7 days. And their words don't match their actions that they were displaying. When they sat with him, they showed love. But when they started talking, they did not show love. Because they approached Job from the point of view that they had, which was, "You must have done something wrong, Job, because that's why all these bad things are happening to you." The problem was, Job hadn't done anything wrong. He tries to tell his friends this. He tries to express his feelings, hoping that they will understand, you know, about just how much he's suffering. But they just keep hammering him with what they believe. And their efforts are an attempt to get him to confess his sin so that he will repent. And once he repents, it was hoped and believed that God would then heal him and restore him. And that's what they were trying to get him to do. It was their way of trying to get his suffering to end. Now, none of them, not even Job, realized that the result of Job's suffering was the result of a conversation between God and the devil, to where the devil had made accusations against Job, and that this man who was righteous and blameless would curse God if his wealth and his health were removed from him. So God allows it. And Job goes through a living hell, and he doesn't know why. Now, in the mind of Job's friends, they're just trying to reason with him. And that if he listened to them, his suffering would end. But as Job stands on his position of, hey, I haven't done anything wrong, and his friends continue to increase their intensity and their efforts to get him to see things from their point of view, things just get worse and worse and worse in the dialogue back and forth, which results in Job's position that he's coming from, which is, I haven't done anything wrong. He just continues to stand on this and maintain this. And so his friends keep hammering him, and he keeps standing on his position, and the dialogues between them just increase in intensity. And so Job's friends verbally attack him, thinking that they're helping him. Job chapter 11, verse 13. If you would direct your heart right and spread out your hand to him, if iniquity is in your hand, put it far away, and do not let wickedness dwell in your tents. Then indeed, you could lift up your face without moral defect, and you would be steadfast and not fear. Now, this is a bit of the dialogue from one of Job's friends. His name is Bildad. Aren't you glad you don't have a name like that? You know. But he basically says here that Job's heart is not right. That if Job would just give his sin to God, that God would take care of it and take it away. But in saying this, he's implying that Job is holding on to wickedness. And Bildad is encouraging him here to let go of it. And if he would, he could lift up his head again high. And he would be seen as righteous and not live in fear. But this implies a lot towards Job. His friends make a number of accusations. They do this with good intentions, but these intentions were lost in the accusations. These stories from the Bible, like Job, are written for many reasons. And one of them is that God gave them to us today from events and words spoken centuries ago. Now, Job did not just lose his wealth. He lost his children. And he's also attacked by his friends here in their attempt to help him. And he was verbally assaulted by them as they were trying to help him. So, why is all this happening? Well, there was a refining work going on in Job and his friends through Job's situation. And to show the devil that he was wrong about Job and that God really does know everything. Now, when God allows an attack to get through, because Job felt attacked here, God allows attacks to expose us, to affirm things in us, to teach us and to refine us. And here Job's friends were also the devil's pawn, bringing accusation and judgment, and Job was their target. But as Job's friends were pressing in on him, in their love for him, their faults were being revealed. Things were being exposed about them in how they treated their friend. That there was a flaw in their beliefs, and that their beliefs were such that they had to be right, and they could not be wrong. And this impacted their treatment of their suffering friend. Keep in mind, before they started talking, he was already in a really bad state. And, of course, their pride and their arrogance was exposed through the things that they said, too. And so their focus on their friend was such that they didn't see what was going on with them because they're focused on him. And they didn't see what was being revealed about them. And these are supposed to be really wise guys. Now, I don't think that Job was feeling the love from them. I really don't. Okay. This is Job chapter 13, verse 2. And this is him speaking here. He says, What do you know, I also know. I'm not inferior to you, but I would speak to the Almighty, and I desire to argue with God. But you smear with lies. You're all worthless physicians. Oh, that you would be completely silent, and that I would become your wisdom. And that it would become your wisdom. So here Job says that his situation doesn't make him inferior to them. So he feels judged by them. And he wants to talk to God instead of them because he knows God and he knows that God is just. But he feels falsely judged by his friends. He says you're of no help, that they were of no help to him. And he wishes they would just be quiet. You know, it's just be quiet and just be wise. Stop talking. and they showed more and were of more help to him when they were just sitting there quietly. Now, what do you think that Job's was the love language of Job's friends? What do you think was Job's love language? Well, I'll tell you, at this moment right here, I think Job needed some quality time and some affirmation. One of the things that attacks do is that when the enemy uses one, is the enemy will use one person against another. And the focus of the attacker or the accuser is on the other person. And when that happens, the accuser is not looking at themselves. But when a person is being refined, when a person is being teachable, the focus is on self. Now again, this all started because Job was a righteous man. And Satan looks at what is godly and tries to tear it down. He tries to remove things from it. He tries to destroy it. He tries to undo it. He tries to ruin what God is doing. But when God allows it, God is using it to improve what is good. Now, we have had a lot of warfare of late as we have proceeded to reopen and rebuild. And the attacks of late are not coming from out there. They're coming from in here. A couple of weeks ago, I talked about Nehemiah chapter 5. And Nehemiah chapter 5 dealt with Nehemiah addressing a situation within the city. They had a problem outside the city. They were armed. They were ready for the enemy outside the city to come in. And as they're rebuilding the wall, Nehemiah comes into a situation that was going on in the city to where the people were enslaving one another because of monies that could not be paid. And Nehemiah didn't know about this when he came to Jerusalem. He had heard about that the city's wall had not been rebuilt, that the gates had been torn down. And he hears about this, and he's troubled about this, because the city is defenseless. And so he's grieving over this. And the king that he serves sees him grieving and asks him about this. And so the king sends Nehemiah there to rebuild the wall. But Nehemiah did not say, when he heard these reports, he didn't say, oh, I'm going to go there and do something about this. No, he wasn't even thinking about that. He was just grieving over the situation. But God sends him there. Now, he went there to rebuild that wall. But God did a lot more with him than just rebuilding that wall. Because as he's rebuilding the wall, he starts to address the issues that were already going on before he even got there within the city. He initiates reforms. He deals with the situation with the slavery. He does these things. And the thing about it was the situation exposed these. And the thing about it is when attacks come, why God allows them is to expose. Because the thing about it is God is so good about protecting us that we have no idea of all the things that the devil tries to get at us with every single day, that we are so perfectly protected that we don't have any idea of all the things that God prevented from happening because that's how good God is in protecting us. And so when something gets through, it has to come through with God's permission. And it comes through with God's permission because God says, hey, there's something I want you to see. Something that needs to be addressed. Something that needs to be looked at. And that's what happened with Nehemiah on the wall. And so these things that are happening with us are to expose, and they're to reveal so that we will see. We'll see the things in us. We'll see the things that need to happen. Now, granted, one of the things that we're all dealing with is what's going on out there. Okay? We've got the virus. We've got the whole mask and vaccine controversy. You know, before that it was who's running the country, and that's still kind of going on. I mean, we got all these things going on. We've got how all this has impacted our economy and our finances and all these things. I mean, before all of that, you know, there was stuff that we had happen in our own house. 90% of the families here were going through some kind of individual crisis. I mean, big time stuff. God's been working on us for a long time, and all this stuff is to address it, expose, and reveal things. So now that we've reopened and we're trying to rebuild, we're dealing with all these other things. We're dealing with COVID check-in, and we're dealing with equipment, and we're dealing with changing the room around all the time and dealing with issues with the broadcast and all these other kind of things we're dealing with right now. And over the months that we've been going through these things, it exposes things in people. Things get arisen in people. And these are opportunities for us to look at ourselves. Or for some of us, it shows us things that need to be addressed in the people that we oversee to help them. Now, the other part of this is God will also allow these things to affirm. For example, Nehemiah really steps up to the plate here in this story. He's incredible. I don't think he knew that was in him. But God did. And so sometimes God will allow things to raise up those things in us, to bring out those things in us that are good, and to develop them and to mature them. And so God allows all these things for these reasons. And so we are in an incredible time of exposing right now. All the changes that we have seen in the world over the last year and a half, they're still going on. I could tell you stories about all the things that are going out there with the people that I know and the people I talk to. There's changes still going on everywhere. This season of change, it's not over. And as things change, things get exposed, things get revealed, things get stirred up, and things get affirmed. I have one friend. His situation, he's been having been assaulted verbally by the people he's serving. And his whole situation where he's helping is just going through lots of changes and things look like they're falling apart. And I told him one day, I said, God is going to do something with you in that situation. And I gave him some details about that. So last week he goes to his regular meeting over there and they have a prophetic person come in. And this person walks up to him and told him everything I said. Talking about his giftings, his abilities, and how they needed him there and how God was going to use him. And this person starts to walk away, and they stopped, and they said, you know what? The whole house needs to hear this, because they were treating him badly. And she stops, and she says, excuse me, everybody. God gave me a word about this person. You all need to hear it. And she said everything to them that she said about him. They got exposed. My friend had seen it, and he was trying to work with it. But nobody's listening to him. So God brings in a prophet, and all of a sudden now they're looking at him different. And the work is really hasn't even really even started yet. They're in the exposing part first before they can make the changes. And so this is the time that we're in. And so it's a time where we really need to be looking and seeing what is God doing, and we need to be looking at us. And so as we deal with all these different things, and the different people, and you know the things that people do, and how we feel about it, and the equipment, and how this doesn't happen, and we can't do this, and that happens, we're going to move this and do that, and it stirs things up in people. We need to look at what is God doing in us, as well as what is God doing in the person that is around, the people around us. But we also need to look at what is God affirming. And so when we talk about attacks, and God lets them through, this is some of what God does, why he lets it get through. Now, the other thing about attacks is that sometimes we can speak to the devil in the authority that we have in Jesus, and he'll stop and he'll leave. But again, when it doesn't, God's let it get through for a purpose. But James chapter 4, verse 7 says, "Submit therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you." Mark 1:25, "And Jesus rebuked him, saying, 'Be quiet and come out of him.'" Jesus was casting a demon out of someone. So the devil will leave when we tell him to. But as I said, sometimes attacks are allowed to show us something about ourselves, to show us how much we have grown and to teach us. Over the last few weeks, I have been reminded of the power of our words and the impact of our actions with one another, and how easy things can be misinterpreted, things can be misunderstood, and some of this is the result of a lack of communication. Some of this is a result of not knowing one another, of not knowing each other better than we do, and the problem is sometimes we can assume, just like Job's friends did with Job. And of course, some of this is warfare. The enemy can attack us through our words, how we see one another, and what we don't see in ourselves, through our lack of knowing and understanding one another. Now, the good news is that these things, these attacks and what we do, can be a learning and developing tool for us, as I said, and in learning and understanding one another and understanding ourselves. So as we go through these things, hopefully it's a learning experience for myself, but also for me in regards to how I see the people around me. So I can come out of something and know the people that are around me better as a result of this. And what this does, it shores our house up. Knowing one another and knowing ourselves will help us with this. Now, the dialogue between Job and his friends shows that they did not know Job. Because if they did, they wouldn't have seen Job as God did. I mean, they would have seen Job as God did. This says in Job chapter 1, verse 8, it says that God said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil." That's God's commentary on Job. Job chapter 1, verse 5. When the days of feasting had completed their cycle, Job would send and consecrate them, meaning his children, raising up early in the morning and offering burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "Perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts," and this Job did continually. So this man was getting up regularly and offering sacrifices for his children in the event that they unintentionally sinned somehow. This is the kind of man he was. But Job's friends don't see this side of him. For them, it's, "You've sinned somehow." So here's the thing. Okay, so what is your love language? Do you know what your love language is? Do you know the ones of your fellow church family members? How can you show love to your family? Are you a pawn of the enemy? Or are you a target of the enemy right now? And do you see how? Do you see how you are towards people and whom you are directing your time and attentions and things to? And in doing that, what does that show you about yourself? Let's pray. Father, I just pray that as we take these words in, I pray, God, that you would just show us the things that you want us to see. The things about the people around us and the things about ourselves. God, I pray that as we go through these times of shaking, these times of change, these times of attack and warfare and all of that, that we would grow through this. That we would rise up through this and be better than we have been. God, I thank you that all this attention shows us that you've got your eye on us because you've got plans for us. Not just us as a house, but each one of us individually. Help us to see what we need to see within us and toward those around us. And I just pray this in Jesus' name. Now, before I turn it over to Fred here, let me just read you the questions that I put out on our church email list here. First question is, how do you show love toward one another in the church? Do we show love to one another in the church? Second question is, how do you show love to others in the church? And do you show love to others in the church? So the one is about how do we do it as a body. The second question is us each individually. The next question is, do you feel loved by your church family? Do the people in your church family know that you love them? How many of us are loved by those around us and we don't know it or feel it because we don't know one another? And we don't know ourselves, and we don't know our love language, whether it be in giving it or receiving it. So for those of you that are watching us on Facebook, God bless you, and we'll see you here next week. And for those of us here, I'm going to turn it over to Fred.